Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. It was one of the most unbelievable nights in American Association history as the St. Paul Saints battle back from deficits twice in this contest to advance to the American Association Championship Series. Kevin, before we go through the highlights, let's just give you a moment to savor in the moment.
As a Saints fan from day one, this is unbelievable. But I know there's another step to be taken. Yeah, there's going to be a very tough Sioux City team awaiting the Saints tomorrow night at Mercy Field at Lewis at Clark Park. But wow, I had this team run off at 5-0. I even sent a message to Dan Vaughn. I said, Dan, I might be joining you and Brad in the Losers Lounge. It's incredible. This team is just. It's just a team of streaks. It gets on a roll and you just can't stop it. And yeah, right now I'm in a state of disbelief.
They have been the comeback kids all season long, and we will talk more about that as this show goes along. But let's begin with the highlights from the show. We begin in the first innings. I'm already in hockey, man. I don't know what that's about. We begin in the first inning where the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks looked like they were going to jump out in front against Saints starter Chris Lee. Brennan Metzger leads off with a base hit in the center. He moves to second on a Devin Ahart base hit, but Lee really settled down and struck out Chris Jacobs and Carell Prime to get out of the frame. And it looked like he, you know, had a little jitters, but took control of it and things were going good for him early.
Yeah, he did a good job. Fargo got on the power play, got some shots. Sorry, I thought I'd add on. Yeah, we were kind of worried that it was going to be a repeat of game one where Lee had a rocky first inning, but like you said, he made the pitches to a couple tough hitters with Jacobs and Prime, and he got out of it with no damage.
In the bottom of the first inning, the Saints looked like they were going to have a golden opportunity. Dan Modal led off with a base hit, and Michael Lang followed with a hit into left center. He rounds first as Modal heads into third, and he did actually beat the throw to second base, but slides past the bag and is tagged out in a play that he argued for a few moments before heading off. You know, Kevin, when that happened, I was really feeling so bad for Lang because I thought, man, after last year, I thought, no, this guy cannot have a bad instance like this in Game 5 and come back to haunt this team.
No, I mean, some people tell you folks later in the show that the Lang got some really nice redemption. But you know what? You can't blame him for being aggressive on that, but I just think that he had the wrong read on it. I think he thought that he may try to make a play on Modal at third base, but they were pretty focused on getting the ball to second.
Well, it was a gutsy play, and he actually would have been safe if he, you know, just hadn't slid past the bag. Unfortunately, that came back to haunt them as Williams is able to get a line out and a ground out to end the threat. And through the second inning, the score is tied at zero. And then in the top of the third, Fargo is able to break this game open. It starts out with Metzger doubling into left field to start the frame. Tim Colwell followed by beating out a sacrifice to advance Metzger to third. He reaches first. The next pitch is a wild pitch, allowing Metzger to score. Colwell moves up to second. Ahart follows with a base hit up the middle. That brings Colwell home, and quickly it's 2-0. A walk to Jacobs, followed by a Leobaldo Pena double off the wall in right center field, scores Ahart, and that was it for the night for Chris Lee. He comes out of the ballgame. Mike Devine comes on for St. Paul and is able to get Wilfredo Jimenez out to line out. But Carlos Garcia battles through quite an at-bat where he fouls off three pitches to stay alive and eventually singles into left field, driving home both runs. And suddenly Fargo had a 5-0 lead, and I thought, man, it might be over, Kevin.
Yeah, I thought the dagger was delivered there via backtrack to the second inning against Ryan Williams. All three outs the Saints made were running plays on balls that were hit really hard by Martinez, Allen, and Young. So you thought when those all turned to outs and then Fargo managed to put five runs on board, you just kind of thought that this was going to be the Saints' night.
In the bottom of the third, and what was kind of a surprise move, is Williams comes out of the ballgame. Maybe it was because he'd given up the hard outs in the second inning, or maybe it was planned from the start, but Michael Tamburino came on in the bottom of the third. He walks two batters, with two outs, but is able to get out of that threat. He gives up two base hits in the fourth, but once again comes out of it unscathed. Still kind of a surprise move, I thought, Kevin, considering, you know, Williams put up quite a season for the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks.
Yeah, we were kind of wondering what the logic was there, too, because if they win, they got to go into a game one against Sioux City tomorrow night, and we just thought the logical move was you pick Williams, and then you'd have Tamburino ready for tomorrow. But you know how that saying goes, you don't, in a game five situation like that, you don't worry about tomorrow. You got to do what you need to do today. Like you said, Williams got hit. Even in the first inning, it was hard contact against Williams, so Williams might not have had it, and Jim Bennett probably recognized that and made the move.
Maybe that was it, because I thought it was kind of interesting that with a five, you know, maybe it was 1-0 or 2-0, I would have kind of seen him taking him out, but 5-0, I thought, well, you know, until the guy shows you there's a reason to take him out, I thought there was really no reason to do so. Can't argue with Tamburino, though. Pitched quite well through the fifth inning. Mike Devine was also pitching excellently after giving up the base hit. Went the next three innings without allowing any base runner and was cruising. That allowed St. Paul to battle back in the bottom of the sixth inning. Brady Shoemaker led off the inning with a shot over the left field wall. It really kind of fired up the team at that point, and you could sense that there was a renewed energy not only in the dugout but in the crowd as well. John Silviano follows with a base hit. Jeremy Martinez walks. Bennett came out at that point to talk to Tamburino about what they were going to do with him. They decided to leave him in. He winds up striking out Josh Allen, and that's when Bennett decides to make the move. You can't argue. Brings in Joe Filomeno, Kevin. That seemed like the logical move at that point.
Well, who was it on this show a night or two ago that said Filomeno has not pitched very good in games at CHS Field the last couple of years?
That was big Kevin Luco who gave us that big insider tip right there. And boy, did that sure prove to be true, Kevin, as he got ahead, or he gets to a 2-2 pitch with Chesney Young, where I think one of the most deciding factors of the game came on when Brennan Metzger, for some reason, came out of the game. We don't know if this was an injury or he was feeling sick or whatever, but the training staff came out. He came out of the game at that point. Alex Boxwell came in, but it was like this long delay. And I felt like that was kind of not only dragging on Filomeno, but it was like, wow, you just lost, you know, one of your top three guys came out of the game. That was a big moment, Kevin.
Well, Brennan Metzger has Crohn's disease, and he suffered a flare-up of that tonight while in the field, and that's why he was removed from the ballgame.
So Metzger comes out of the ballgame at that point. Chesney Young follows with a base hit that brings home Silviano. Next up is Chris Baker, who did not have a hit in the series, but he blasts a three-run homer deep over the left field wall to tie the score at 5, and that was one of the most dramatic moments I've seen in a playoff game before, Kevin.
Yeah, that was he launched a 5-iron shot there. Filomeno, I didn't think it was that bad of a pitch. It was low in the zone, but Bennett was able to square it up and blast it over the left field wall, and we had ourselves a tie game.
The game remained tied heading into the top of the eighth inning. Karch Kowalczyk came on for St. Paul. He's able to retire Chris Jacobs, but Carell Prime beats out kind of a slow roller for a base hit. That brings Leobaldo Pena to the plate, who drills a towering drive in over the center field wall to make it 7-5 Fargo. And I was like, okay, well, you had a great rally, but once again, I guess it's going to come up short again.
Yeah, old Mo ran back over to the third base dugout. And Pena, he was the runner-up in the Home Run Derby this year at CHS Field. He got up against fastball pitcher with Karch Kowalczyk. Kowalczyk challenged him, and Pena was up to it, depositing the ball into the batter's eye in center field, and it was 7-5 Redhawks.
It seemed like the crowd was definitely taken out of the game, but you know, you looked at that St. Paul dugout and you could tell that they did not think that this was the end of the world for them by any stretch of the imagination. They've been in this situation quite often this season, and they came right back in the bottom half of the inning. Josh Allen leads off with a base hit, and Young follows with a single down the right field line that sends Allen to third. Bennett comes out of the dugout, decides to go with his closer, who on the very first pitch throws it over the top of Jimenez, allowing Allen to score and Young to move in to second. This was a one-run game at that point. That brought Baker. Baker was still at the plate. He winds up drawing a walk, putting two on with no one out. Blake Schmidt then lays down a perfect sacrifice, and that brings Dan Moto to the plate, who falls behind 3-0, and then the team opts to intentionally walk him. And if it's not for Wilfredo Jimenez, The ball is clearly going over to his head on this intentional walk. I don't know what was going on with Broussard, but you could tell early on, Kevin, he just did not have it tonight.
Well, I was talking with Fargo's on the media or their social media guy tonight, and he said that it's very rare that Broussard comes into a game with guys on bases. He used to come in the top of an inning, and they were looking at him to get six outs tonight. So it was, you know, it might have just been a situation that Broussard just was not very comfortable with.
You could be right there, and it sure looked like he wasn't comfortable with it at all. After Modell is intentionally walked, that brings Michael Lang to the plate. As we talked about early on in this show, Michael Lang kind of had that tough play last year in Game 5, but he is the recipient of a tough play, grounding a ball down to Leobaldo Pena, who misplays it. That allows two St. Paul Saints to score, giving St. Paul the lead, putting runners at first and third. It was a moment of redemption for Lang, Kevin.
Yeah, don't, you know, lost and all that, too, is if Yoshua Medina is healthy and out there, you got a feeling he makes a play and possibly turns a double play on that.
And you're probably talking about that correctly. And I would also say is that normally Pena turns that into a double play. You know, this was just kind of a fluke error that, you know, that winds up being at the worst possible time. Brady Shoemaker.
Yeah, it looked like he just came up early on it. He was anticipating it too much to turn the double play in. Just ball got under him.
Brady Shoemaker follows with a sacrifice fly to make it 9-7. In the top of the ninth inning, Tanner Keese comes on for St. Paul. He strikes out all three batters he faced, sending the St. Paul Saints on to the American Association Championship Series. Kevin, wow, Kevin, that was just an unbelievable night.
I don't know what it sounded like for you folks ever watching at home, but there wasn't a ton of people here tonight, but wow, did they make some noise. It sounded like a full house, and hats off to the people here at CHS Field tonight because, wow, they provided the home field advantage that the Saints needed.
Let me tell you
I
about
hope they're back out here for the weekend.
Let me tell you about hats off to as well, Kevin, because over 18,000 people were watching this game online. I watched it a couple of times during the game. That's crazy.
I was getting messages from all over the place tonight during the game. So it was, yeah, it was something else. They had center stage and, wow, they delivered a classic.
Boy, I was really hyped up about how excited people were around the league to be watching this thing. And I think this should bode well for what the championship series is like. So, Kevin, let's
jump
into
that. An unrelated note, there was the first game of the Can-Am League Championship Series tonight. I was digging through that during some downtime. And New Jersey won the first game of their championship series on a walk-off wild pitch with the bases loaded.
Crazy night all the way around in independent baseball, for sure. Well, Kevin and I had intended to make this show about the championship series on for the Tuesday night, but the rain delay forced a combination. So Kevin, we're going to have to take a look at the championship series, which will begin tomorrow in Sioux City. St. Paul has a very short turnaround as they will head out in about an hour from now on their way down to Sioux City. Let's first of all talk about keys for St. Paul. What are you expecting to see out of them, and what do they got to do to win this series?
Well, I think they got to be better than Sioux City at their own game at Mercy Field at Lewis and Clark Park. Sioux City likes to play the running game. They like to put balls in play, make things happen, and I think St. Paul can kind of play the same kind of game with Sioux City. So you get here, and it's more of a power game. I think St. Paul's got the advantage at home. But with that being said, Sioux City also has three real good starters that they can trot out with Eric Karch, Taylor Jordan, and Pete Tago. So advantage of pitching, I think it goes to Sioux City. I'd say the bullpens are about even. It's just a matter of offense. Slight edge to St. Paul because they'll have the three games here at CHS Field. But I think the key is they need to take one or two down there. They need to find a way to win a game down there and come back home and only have to take two out of three to get the championship.
Well, I think it's going to be a little more difficult for them. I think they're going to be really challenged tomorrow night. I think this team is going to be coming off a huge emotional high. Then you have this long bus ride and you used up your bullpen quite a bit here. So I could see where there's going to be kind of a letdown tomorrow night. I think Sioux City winds up winning those first two games of the series. And I think the key to them right now is the fact that their bullpen is going to be very well rested, is coming off a series where they pitched fairly well against Kansas City, especially in the last few games of that series, that they were, kind of dominating a very good T-Bones team, not necessarily a healthy T-Bones team, but a team that still has a lot of pop to that lineup. And I think that Sioux City winds up coming back to St. Paul leading 2-0. I think the key for them right now, though, Kevin, is rust. You're going to looking at a few days off, and sometimes that kind of messes up timing. And just as much as St. Paul might be a little dragging, I'm wondering if Sioux City's a little off their game because of having so many days off before this championship series gets underway.
I think with this time of year, I just think the days off are really valuable. I know, like the Jose Sermo, for as well as he's playing, he's awfully banged up at this point too. So, yeah, I think the rest was paramount to Sioux City being ready for the championship series.
Well, I'm going to go first tonight, Kevin, and I'm going to tell you that I believe that the Sioux City Explorers wind up being American Association champions by winning this series in four.
That's exactly what I was going to go with too. So, boy, I hope we're wrong.
Well, I do want to say that we split in the division series. So we're going to wind up tied with each other one way or the other as this th for this year's
Don't
playoffs.
show we're equally incompetent. So.
Or equally confident. If we both win, then I would say I guess we're confident. But
Oh, yeah, I like to be incompetent, but.
I'm with you on that one. I'm with you. But I, you know, th this is a series between. What I think is going to be fun about the series is that, we've got to watch 5 years of some fairly bad blood between these two teams and two managers that aren't necessarily on the best of terms with one another. So I think this should be pretty interesting.
Well, St. Paul, they've got everything. They got Under Armour this, Under Armour that. I went back and was reading the article from 2015 where Montgomery was playing the poor, poor me card. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting series, that's for sure. It'll be entertaining.
Well, let's talk about other news around the American Association. There are two big tidbits out there. The first one is kind of not really news anymore, but Haymarket Park named for the 19th straight season as the best playing surface in the league. Once again, Kevin, really not a surprise.
No, I don't know what they do there, but obviously they're doing something right.
In Milwaukee, for the second straight day, we have some interesting news out of there is that the Routine Baseball LLC is suing the Milwaukee Milkmen for improperly naming their field Routine Field this past season, claiming that an official contract hadn't been signed. To be honest with you, Kevin, in reading that article and eventually writing about this earlier today, I really don't understand what Routine Baseball is griping about. I don't
No,
get it.
they basically got a year of free advertising.
Yeah, exactly. So, what are you griping about? I mean, honestly, I looked at this and thought, are you seriously complaining that you got the stadium named after your business, probably a ton of free publicity, and you're crying about it? I mean,
Yeah, well, I think if you read further too, that there's some issues with their using equipment from other organizations, and they're supposed to be specifically working with Routine Baseball. So, just look it up on Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, jsonline.com. Just do a search for Milwaukee Milkmen. You can read it for yourself.
you can also find the story through the article I wrote out on Minor League Sports Report if you click on the link talking about this particular stadium naming situation. Kevin, when I was writing this today, the thing that kind of jumped out at me is I thought when you went to visit that ballpark in March or April that the people from Routine actually gave you some stuff. Was that right?
Yes, they did. They were very enthusiastic about it, so.
So I really don't understand the complaint, I guess, is really what I'm at.
Right, right.
The thing we didn't talk about so far because we were not on the air yesterday was manager Gary McClure is replaced by his bench coach for this coming season, a move that both of us are kind of shaking our heads about Why you replace one guy who didn't have a lot of experience with another guy now who has no experience?
No, it's kind of mine. I mean, so go figure. Milwaukee's kind of an odd organization. They're doing the right things with their promotions and off the field, but on the field, it's been very puzzling.
Well, I'm a little perplexed because if your concern or the desire to get rid of your manager was because you thought you didn't win enough, why did you go with a guy who had no professional managing experience in the first place? It would have seemed that the
Right.
place would have been to start with would have been Doug Simonek. If he wanted to win right off, there would have been your guy. So I don't really get it,
Right.
Kevin.
No, it's puzzling.
Well, Kevin and I will be back with you again tomorrow night. But before we head out, Kevin, any final excited thoughts you have for us?
Yeah, this probably hasn't even had a chance to sink in yet. So might go back, watch a replay as I get my maybe 5 hours of sleep before returning to the real job tomorrow.
Well, that is awesome. Kevin and I want to thank you for joining us tonight. We will be back with you after game one of the American Association Championship game tomorrow, which will hopefully be sometime around 10:30 or 11. So for Kevin, I am Rob, and we will see you next time on This Week in the Association.